From Welcome Villain Films, the studio that brought you the horror hit Malum, as well as Beaten to Death and Hunter Killer, comes their newest nightmare, Mind, Body, Spirit, now available on digital. Directed by Alex Haynes and Matthew Miranda, and produced by Dan Asma, Mind, Body, Spirit follows Anya, an aspiring yoga influencer, as she embarks on a ritual practice left behind by her estranged grandmother. What starts as a spiritual self-help guide quickly evolves into something much more sinister, as Anya becomes increasingly obsessed with the mysterious power of the practice. She unwittingly unleashes an otherworldly entity that begins to take control of her life and her videos. Now, Anya must race to unlock the truth before her descent into madness threatens to consume her mind, body, and spirit. During its festival tour, with stops at Chattanooga Film Festival and the Unnamed Footage Festival, Mind, Body, Spirit garnered praise from critics who call it a found footage version of Hereditary and a knockout found footage horror movie for the live stream era. Experience the first ever yoga-themed found footage horror film, and don't miss the film viewers have called extremely frightening and upsetting. Available now on digital anywhere you rent or buy movies online, including Prime Video and Apple Plus.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong, and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am the managing editor of Dread Central. I am also a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Development Hell. Happy Halloween, everybody. And on today's very special Halloween episode, we're going to be joined by Cassandra Peterson, aka Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. So this has got to be one of the most exciting events to ever happen on this podcast. Elvira is not only a horror icon, but a queer icon, and everything I love about genre, drag, horror, and Halloween. So to make sure that we're doing this right, I've decided that in this episode, we're going to be talking about Elvira's Halloween survival guide, her personal journey into development hell. And before we get going, I'm actually joined today by another queen of Halloween, my lifelong friend and creative collaborator, Emily Gagne. Emily, how's it going?
It's going amazing. I'm just happy to be here in conversation with Elvira in a strange way again. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm not directly, but I sort of am.
Well, I'm seeing it as like my biography and Elvira, and I'm having you sort of write the epilogue.
Yeah.
I've talked to a few people that listen to this podcast, and they bring you up and they say that they like really enjoy our chemistry and the fact that we've known each other forever. But just in case there are some newbies here today, I was wondering, can you reintroduce yourself to the Development Hell audience?
Sure. I have known Josh forever, I'm going to say, like, since we were in grade one. So it's a long-standing relationship. But also, I write for Dreads. I have a column called Final Girl Fashion, which talks about costumes in horror movies. Sometimes I write reviews. We did a TIFF episode of Development Hell. And, you know, I also am a film programmer in my spare time, and I focus on women-directed things. I think that's it. I think that's pretty much me.
I mean, that's a lot of what we love about you, but I'm going to say, apart from all of that, I brought you on today, you know, for your special relationship with Elvira. I know that you actually had a really cool interview with her at Dread Central recently. I'm wondering if you could just give us sort of a brief history about, you know, why is Elvira important to you?
You guys can't see me. I'm talking to the listeners right now. You guys can't see me, but I'm very high femme, but I love horror movies. So a lot of times people think I don't love horror movies because of the way that I physically present. I have blonde hair. I'm kind of like the blonde Munster, you know, like I'm like Marilyn Munster. And so people are like, what, you like horror movies? And I'm like, yes, I do. And that's why I love Elvira, because I think she personifies who I am in the horror community, which is like, I love spooky stuff, but I'm also kind of a valley girl. And that's what Elvira is to me and has always been. I think anyone in horror is drawn to her, but I have a specific sort of connection to her as like a high femme horror fan.
You're a babe and you're spooky. And those things, I think, go so well together, even if people are kind of shocked by it when it happens. And I think Elvira is sort of a good example of what's so shocking about sexy lady horror.
And she also, like, and I actually spoke with her about this when I interviewed her for Dread, she kind of reminds me of Dolly Parton for horror, which is like that she's like this like larger than life personality who has giant boobs but is like really smart and actually like knows her shit. Like if you talk to her about classic horror movies, like, and if you read Elvira, like Cassandra Peterson's memoir, like she has loved horror since she was a kid. It's not just an act that she puts on as Elvira. Like she, like Vincent Price is her actual hero. And she like loved Creatures of the Night when she was a kid. That's what she played with as a kid. So like, mm-hmm. I relate to that on a level too, where like you sort of make horror your career in a way, which I know you can relate to too.
Definitely. And in our conversation, or in my conversation with Elvira, I sort of ask her what the movie that really scared her the most growing up is. And I'm not going to spoil it, but it is a Vincent Price original. So that's kind of cool.
Okay.
And, you know, as almost everybody knows, Elvira is the character created by Cassandra Peterson. And Cassandra Peterson herself also pretty extraordinary, is in a few of my favorite movies, including one that we got to talk about on Dread Central, was it 1 or 2 years ago? It's Peaches Christ, All About Evil. Mm-hmm. And it's always a treat to me when we get to see Cassandra as Cassandra in a movie too.
Well, I also feel like people don't know that like she's a redhead. She's a ginger. Like that's what she is. But we think of her having black hair, but in truth, she's a ginger. And so when you see her like out of Elvira drag, you're like, whoa, who's this person?
Pretty crazy. I'm sure she kind of has to warn people ahead of time. Like today is Cassandra Day.
Yeah.
You know, be prepared. She goes redhead in the Munsters, the Rob Zombie Munsters movie that came out recently.
I like it. I brought up the Munsters twice already on this short conversation. But yes, I loved the Munsters, and I feel like I understand why she would relate to somebody like Rob Zombie, and that he also like loves horror. And so like I could see them really bonding like in that way.
I think that they're good buds.
Yeah.
And what was your first experience with Elvira? Was she always kind of there? Like, where does your journey with her begin?
I mean, I think as any child of like the 80s and like early 90s can attest, like Elvira has just been like in our lives. Like she's always been like sort of in the shadows lurking there. And I think for me, I honestly originally saw her in like ads for Halloween related things, like, you know, beers and stuff like that. Like she was like on TV in that way, or being a horror hostess. Like that's what I knew. I didn't like as a kid initially like see Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, the movie, until I was a little bit older. But she was just this figure, kind of like the Crypt Keeper, I'm going to say, like that, like I knew about, but like didn't know where she came from. And like, as I've gotten older, I've sort of read into her history, and it's like even cooler than you could imagine.
I agree, sort of, from my experience, where she was ubiquitous when it came to my favorite time of year, which is Halloween. She's everywhere, and she always kind of was, and she's looks exactly the same right now in character as she did when I was growing up. Kind of this like goddess of Halloween that comes around every year, kind of like, I'm sorry to make this comparison, but like the Mariah Carey of Christmas, you know? Yeah. It's like this diva that emerges, as you say, from the shadows, and I'm just so excited for it to happen on an annual basis.
Yeah, it's awesome. Every time I see her, I just like my heart like turns on, you know what I mean? Like, it just like, I feel like alive when I see her. And I think like she's committed to the bit her whole life. Yeah, she looks like pristine.
Could she be sexier? I just don't think it's possible.
No. And like,
we've met, I don't know, she probably doesn't remember this herself, but you and I actually have been in the same room as Elvira, and it was actually on a really important day. So Emily and I made a short film together a few years ago, and it was a really important moment for both of us creatively, and we got to take this short called Best Friends Forever to the Salem Horror Festival, and I think that's where we had our world premiere. And the same night that we, I think, was it the same night as our premiere? Yeah. Elvira sort of had a little event there, and we were in the same room and got to take a picture and kind of got to meet her. And I think we were like the last ones that made it in the door. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a spiritual experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like very like affirming. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, whoa. And then I felt like we had good luck going into our screening, you know? Yeah. It just was like, it was perfect way to like cap off our trip to Salem for that. And that's festival, I think, is like such a personification of Elvira as like an entity as well. Like, that festival is so queer and so like campy and so like welcoming to everybody, which is, I think, the vibe that Elvira gives off. Like, very welcoming to everybody.
I have to agree.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of drag. I know that you are too. Mm-hmm. Elvira's been on Drag Race a couple of times. How do you think drag and Elvira sort of intersect?
Well, I think like it is a drag art for her. Like, I know I made that comparison to Dolly Parton, who I also think is kind of a drag artist in her own way, because she like wears wigs all the time, and you never see her not as Dolly Parton, in the same way that like it's very rare that you see Elvira not as Elvira. Like, she puts on the drag and that's it. It's like a hyper, you know, realistic version of femininity, which is what drag is to me. But drag is also like camp, and I think like that, like Elvira is so campy. Like, I think she often is like put in the same category with like Pee-wee Herman, for example, who is another like camp icon that like just sort of defies like realism, or is like just like out of this world.
Totally.
And I think that's what drag is too. That's what I think. Like, drag, I think, and Elvira really go hand in hand. One of the things that I always love to point out to people is that on RuPaul's Drag Race, they always say, like, how's your head? And people say, I haven't had any complaints. And that's from Elvira. That's an Elvira quote that is, like, constantly used. Totally. But people think that's a RuPaul quote in them. That is
Elvira. I think RuPaul steals from Elvira a lot, if I'm not mistaken. He loves her, like, silly, punny, horny sense of humor. And who wouldn't?
I think like a lot of the skits that they do on Drag Race honestly are like based off of like Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Like, I think that like film was like such an important part of RuPaul Charles's like identity that it like can't help but seep into the media like that. Like, how do you feel about like Elvira's connection to drag? Like, did you always see that, or like do you feel like it's sort of become more present to you over time?
You know, the longer I sort of understand drag, the more I realize that it really has very little to do with gender and all to do with expression. And once I sort of got to understand those nuances, there's no difference between what Elvira is doing and what drag is doing. It's all performance and expression and art and genre. And it's all kind of in the same little cornucopia, I think.
Yeah. I always also thought that, like, Elvira, the name, was a combination of Elvis and Vampira, which I found out when I spoke with her on the phone, that that is not the intention, but it makes a lot of sense because, like, I think, like basically she was sort of like a play off of Vampira. And famously, like, Sandra Peterson loves Elvis, but, like, that's what drag is. Like, it's like kind of like a parody of, like, of
femininity,
of femininity, but, like, also characters that we already know. Like, think of how many drag names are, like, sort of like a play on words of, like, somebody that we already know.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
Do you know my drag name?
Crystal Lake.
Yeah. Crystal Lake.
Yeah. So I think so much of Elvira feels like drag, and I think it's why, like, when she came out as queer or you know, said that she was dating a woman, like, so many of us just were like, this makes sense to me. Like, there was always some sort of queer culture about Elvira.
Yeah, and queer people are historically just attracted to horror and attracted to drag and attracted to all of these sort of forms of expression for whatever reason that we don't really need to get into right now. So having Elvira sort of come out, I weigh, and sort of be in our community, it was like a really, I think you said affirming, but like a really wonderful moment for, I think, us as queer fans too.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Because I think, like, we just have latched on to her. Like, I know that she has this presence of being, like, maybe, like, straight presenting. Like, you're like, oh, like, she's so big boobed and she's, like, flirting with men in these movies that we watch. But I think, like we were saying with the drag stuff, like, there's more to it than that. And it's kind of playing with the expectation of, like, cisgender and straightness, like, trying to, like, be like, this is silly. This is silly. Like, let's talk about how silly it is that, like, a big boobed woman is going to sell a beer because she would, you know?
And back to her movies, you know, obviously this is a podcast about horror movies that never escaped the development hell cycle. And that's something I sort of dig into a little bit with her. She has two films, like, there's Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and then there's Elvira's Haunted Hills, which is a much more sort of indie production. I'm assuming you've seen both of these?
Yeah, I've seen both.
I love them both.
The second film that feels like authentically Elvira in, like, what it's parodying and, like, homage to Vincent Price and stuff like that.
And its goofiness, even though those are both extraordinarily goofy.
Yeah.
We talk about, and we'll learn about why she had such a hard time getting things made and, you know, the issues in Hollywood and the issues of being, you know, a sexy lady in Hollywood. And I'm excited for everyone to hear, you know, what she has to say about that. But road movie she had in mind as a second feature. But, you know, even the title alone, Elvira Goes to Hell, like, wouldn't you just pay an arm and a leg?
Literally, I would give my left tit to see that movie, you know?
Me too.
Like, I would. Yeah, I always feel like she's got something else in her. So I, like, hope that, like, you know, the more that she does conversations like this, you know, like, the more people remember how great she is and, like, give her more things to do. Because, like, like I say, like, there's just nothing like seeing her. Like, she's the queen for a reason. You know, she's the queen of Halloween for a reason.
Totally. All right, Emily, I thank you for this very terrifying epilogue. I really appreciate it. You have the most interesting Elvira insight, in my opinion. And I just always like an excuse for having you on the pod.
Well, I am happy to come on anytime, but especially talk about Elvira. I could talk about her all day. And I'm just going to say to anyone that's listening, if you haven't read her book already, Yours Cruelly, like, please read it. It is exceptional and it'll give you a whole other understanding about this beautiful person that we've grown to love.
Please enjoy this conversation with Cassandra Peterson, aka Elvira.
How
happy Halloween. How has October been for you so far this year?
Busy as ever. Never seems to slow down. I always think it kind of will, and then it doesn't.
Of course, you're busy this time of year, but do you have time for any Halloween traditions with family and friends?
Nope. I actually, for the second time only in 43 years, I get to go to a Halloween party on Halloween night in my neighborhood. And I get to actually wear a costume that's not Elvira for the first time, second time. Last year was my first time going to a Halloween party in 42 years.
So what are you dressing up as?
Well, there was a theme and the theme was ghosts. And okay. So I am dressing as something completely opposite Elvira. I'm dressing as a nun, but I'm doing ghost makeup. So I'm the Holy Ghost.
And what were you last year for the first time in 40 years?
Well, the theme last year was you had to be something that was in the sky. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
How does one dress up as Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds?
I had like little diamonds glued all over me. I had sparkly things. I had a blue wig. I had a psychedelic bell bottoms and top on, wings. And I don't know. I think I kicked it.
How do you deal with Halloween burnout?
Yeah, that has always been an issue for me. I mean, I probably make 9/10 of my income during the month of October, you know? And so I start in August and I work like a fiend through August, September, and October. And I do get burned out, you know, but I have to kind of, what I sort of do is prepare all the rest of the year, you know?
It's like getting ready for hibernation.
Yeah, exactly. It's like eating everything that I can find so that I do that all the time anyway. Yeah, no, it is. That's so funny you said that. That's a good joke. Get prepared for hibernation. It's very much like that for Halloween, yes.
Now, you slayed last year in Rob Zombie's Munsters movie. What was that experience like for you?
It was so incredibly fun. I got to go to Hungary and we shot in, I always get Budapest and Bucharest mix up. Budapest, yeah. Mm-hmm. Shot in Budapest, and the cast stayed in one big kind of old palace in town, and we had a blast every night. I mean, and every day. I mean, Rob and Sherry, of course, were working very hard. Everybody was working hard, but we still have time to hang out for dinners together and have some fun. It was a really, really fun movie set and fun people. I mean, I love Rob and Sherry.
What a dream team. And even for superstars like Rob Zombie and yourself, getting a movie made can be really tough. How has your experience been with Development Hell?
Well, it's been very, very tough over my lifetime because, you know, after a few years of being Elvira on TV, I finally got this film project underway with NBC, later NBC Universal. But because of problems with the distribution, the company distributing it went bankrupt, I think 2 days after my film was released, one or two. And that caused the whole thing to be pulled from theaters. And then my box office numbers were not good. And I couldn't get another movie made for the life of me. Because basically, studios look at the numbers. How well did you do in your last movie? If you did phenomenal, they'd do another movie. If you did not so phenomenal, they don't do another movie. So for years and years and years, my writing partner, John Paragon, and I wrote movies and submitted them and took them to every single studio and production company there was and couldn't get another movie made for the life of me. Finally, I decided to make my own movie while I was still young enough to do it, you know, and used my own money, shot it in Romania, you know, because it was, you know, you could get a lot more bang for your buck over there. And did it on my own, you know, Elvira's Haunted Hills. And, you know, I don't know that it's as good as the first one. It is in a different way. A lot of people like it better than the first one.
I love it.
It's a whole different vibe. But I always tell people Haunted Hills cost $1 million. Mistress of the Dark cost $14 million. So, you know, it's weird. I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't get a movie made. And it was so frustrating for me. I think part of it had to do with being a woman also. I don't mean to sound like sour grapes, but being a woman and being like a sexy woman, you know, I'm trying to get a movie made. And meanwhile, Ernest, you know, who is the, you know, the character in the 80s, Vern,
yep.
yeah, he was getting one movie made after another, you know, and, and I couldn't get anything going at all. So I still look back on it with a little bit of bitterness, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all want more Elvira on screen. Out of all of the projects that you developed with your writing partner, if Blumhouse came along and said you had carte blanche, which one would you bring to life?
I had a ton of them that were so awesome. One thing I would have done, well, I had this one called Elvira Goes to Hell. And it looks like a buddy picture. Yeah. And I really liked that one. It was really funny. It was revolved around Halloween a little bit more. But I think if I had my choice to have made another movie that had a decent budget with a film studio, I would have gone a lot more in the vein of Mistress of the Dark, which mm-hmm. really seemed to work for the character, which is a fish out of water. Mm-hmm. With Haunted Hills, we took a stab at being a fish in water. You know, everything around me was also spooky. Everyone around me was spooky. And I don't think it works as well as seeing Elvira juxtaposed against the normies, you know?
Yes, yes. Elvira Goes to Hell, what a great title. Is there like anything else you can tell me about that storyline?
Oh my gosh, it was kind of loosely based, honestly, on the Ernest movies, you know, because his movies were always like, you know, Ernest goes to the mall, Ernest goes to the bathroom, whatever he does, you know? And so it was sort of based on that. It was like, hey, that's working for him. Maybe it'll work for me. Fortunately, it didn't. But I thought, you know, where's Elvira going to go? This cool. She has to go to hell.
She absolutely does. And there's still time.
Maybe prison.
Whoa, that'd be great. that would be good. She could like run the prison. Oh, there's ideas everywhere. Exactly. There have been reports or maybe even rumors of an animated Elvira project or film. If that were to happen, how would you want it to be, a show or a film?
I would 100% want it to be a film. I have mm-hmm. been approached and worked a little on various animated projects for TV, for like a series. And I don't know, for one reason or another, they never kind of worked out. And there was nothing that I was super thrilled about either. But I want to do a film that is almost like a Disney film that really explores where the character came from, what she does, how she's tied into the holiday of Halloween, which is becoming such a big thing, not just in the US, but worldwide. And mm-hmm. In a fantasy way, you know, but a film that kind of starts out like inventing the character of Elvira, you know, kind of along, kind of the vibe of maybe, you know, Edward Scissorhands almost, which I think of as a beautiful fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, one of mine too. And you know, I think that could be done with the Elvira character to explain mm-hmm. why and what her connection is with Halloween. So mm-hmm. I just blew that whole thing. But that is what we came up with and what we wrote and what I really would love to do for an animated movie.
Well, fans love Elvira's work with Scooby-Doo. Is there any chance we're going to see more of that in the future?
Well, I don't know. I guess that would be up to the people to make Scooby-Doo, but I had a blast doing that. And I thought it was so damn funny. I mean, they really did a good job with the character and with the jokes. And I thought the funniest thing I'd ever seen was at the end when my wig is actually a rhesus monkey sitting on my head. And I give it to one of the kids and, you know, the Scooby-Doo gang, and I have to tell them how to feed it and everything. So I couldn't stop laughing over that. That was brilliant of them to do.
Has your queer fan base been reaching out to you more since the release of your book?
Yeah, I don't know if actually more. I think they always did, you know, mm-hmm. I think they always did. But it's very sweet that like when I meet my fans, many of them now say, I'm so happy and proud of you for, you know, coming out and it took a lot of guts. I think it's so sweet, you know, so I do hear those compliments now a lot. Yeah, I think my fan base was always pretty queer.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so. Elvira is a very femme character, mm-hmm. but if there was a male version of Elvira, maybe a drag king version, have you ever mm-hmm. wondered what he would be like?
Oh, he'd have to be a wuss because I wear the pants in all this family.
Hot.
He wouldn't be No, he would be. I'd be calling the shots. I can just tell you that. Elvira doesn't back down from things. So she'd be the one running the show.
Why do you think queer folk tend to gravitate to horror movies and all things spooky?
You know, that's an interesting thing. I have thought about it for years. I think probably for the same reason when I grew up that I felt like an outcast and that something was wrong with me. I wasn't normal. I wasn't like the other kids. And that wasn't because I was gay, because I wasn't gay. It was because I had been burned as a child and I had all these scars and I was bullied and teased. And I think a lot of gay people have experienced that through their life. And strangely, that seems to be one of the, I don't know, it's amazing how many people I come across who's had some childhood or teen trauma that made them gravitate towards horror. Mm-hmm. I think it felt more comfortable for them. They what's the damn word I'm looking for? They associated with associated, it's not the right word, with the monster. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah, I do. Relate?
Yeah, it related more. That would be a better word. Yeah, they related more to the monster in a horror movie than to the person who, you know, was the hero or whatever. I mean, I think that's how it was for me when I was a kid. Of course, the horror movies back then were a lot more tame and everything, but there's something there, and I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know exactly what it is, but mm-hmm. I'm always amazed at how many people, whether they're straight or queer, had a hard time when they were kids or preteens, you know?
Definitely.
And I think there's something that goes with the horror genre there.
I think so too. Was there ever a horror movie or a show that really freaked you out or traumatized you growing up?
Well, there was. I mean, it was House on Haunted Hill with Vincent Price. I mean,
nice.
I've never seen or heard of a horror movie or TV show or anything when my cousin took me to see House on Haunted Hill at the movie theater. And it was life-changing for me. I mean, I you know how when something happens and you remember exactly where you were sitting and the moment you remember how everything looked around you, you know? Yeah. There's moments like Kennedy getting shot, you know, or whatever in the past. That's how I remember seeing this movie. It was just like, what? You know, mm-hmm. couldn't believe my eyes. And I was incredibly scared and had nightmares for weeks after. And my parents kicked my cousin's butt, but for taking me. But at the same time, I wanted more, 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 more. I was fascinated by it. And all I could do was beg my cousin to take me to more of those same type of horror movies, you know, the Hammer films, the Roger Corman films. And I got so into that I was next searching out horror magazines and little models that I could paint and everything horror. So mm-hmm. I don't even remember the question. Now I'm just rambling away.
No, I love it. Did you ever see the remake?
I did, and I didn't like it.
No.
Nah, you can't reheat an old souffle.
No, you can't. But that's a great answer. And it was an honor getting to talk with you today. So thank you so much.
Thank you. That was great.
Thank you so much for listening to Development Hell. If you enjoy this podcast, then please do us a major favor of leaving us 5 stars and writing a positive review. It really makes all the difference in the world. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.